Hello, Internet, and welcome to the Engadget Podcast, episode 25, Black Hole Sun. Our regular host, Terrence O'Brien, isn't here today, but I'm Devendra Hardwar, senior editor, and I'm joined by a flock of people. This is Team Brown in Engadget.
Let's call it Team Browncast.
Yeah. Today joining me is reviews editor, Sherilyn Lowe. Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Lowe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Great.
Also, social media editor, Mallory Johns. Hello.
Hello.
First appearance on the podcast.
First appearance on the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm very excited to be here on Team Browncast.
Making your Broadway debut.
Hello. And Chris Velasco, senior editor and our mobile lead.
That's
Chris.
Me. Hey, hi.
Hey.
How you doing?
What's going on?
What's popping, Slime?
I wasn't going to go there.
Why?
This is why
we're never having you back, Mallory.
I chose not to be that person for the first time in my life.
We will try really hard
to watch out for
in-jokes.
Yeah.
Everybody.
No in-jokes, guys.
But that's like your thing.
I'm staring
you know?
At all of you guys.
Yeah, but
that's your catchphrase.
New Year's resolution, though.
Don't look at me, Devendra.
It's your catchphrase.
Okay. Everyone no two conversations going on at one time. Just one.
Sorry.
Yes.
Thanks a lot.
How are you guys doing?
I'm not well.
Okay.
Because of tomorrow.
What's tomorrow?
A very sad gray day in this
country.
Huh. I'll be wearing black, as I am right now, so maybe I'm just preparing for being in mourning. But it's the inauguration of this person who's going to be a president, I think. Yeah.
I think.
Maybe. Yeah, details escape me. But that
doesn't affect the title of this podcast at all. Yeah, we're all feeling a little doom and gloom here. But
it doesn't help
we'll
that
see.
A lot of us are still sort of like residually sick from CES.
That too.
Which just will not let us go.
Yeah.
And it's like what happens when you're in a family when one person is sick and just keeps going around and around. They just keep passing it on to each other. I think that's what's going to happen.
So we'll be sick for the next 7 to 8 months happening.
Until
here,
CES again. So.
And I kind of cursed myself last night by saying I didn't catch the sickness because this morning I had an insane coughing fit.
You asked for it.
Yeah.
You basically did.
Basically.
But nothing like some good debate to get that out of you.
No,
huh?
Definitely.
Segway.
Good job.
I know.
Let's start with our Flame Wars segment. This is where we pick a topic, have two of you guys just kind of go at it and fight each other and see who, man, Sherilyn.
What?
Man. No, but
this
and
just
see.
Really judgy, by the way.
And we'll basically see who wins in this debate segment. We'll take a pro and con side. And just so listeners know, we don't always believe in the sides we take. We kind of just, it's kind of like a debate. We just pick a side and just have to fight for it.
It's an exercise in.
It's an intellectual exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, yeah. I couldn't care less about the topics today, to be honest. So.
Whoa.
Wow.
Whoa.
Okay.
There's some good stuff.
Wow.
We've had a good Flame Wars, actually.
There's about two that I care about.
You're like, hey? Yeah.
All right.
All right, so we're going to have Sherilyn and Velasco fight each other, and Mallory, you'll be the judge, and you'll figure out who wins these things. And our first story, we had a great story this week about the product placement in Final Fantasy XV, specifically the Cup of Noodles product placement, which is, that kind of disturbed me the first time I saw it. This is a story by Sean Buckley in Gadget, and it's not just Cup of Noodles, there's Coleman coolers. There's a whole bunch of different product placement in this thing. Just wondering, what do you guys think of it? Sherilyn?
I don't think it's a good idea in that it's not necessarily something that's not subtle, right? It's obvious that it's product placement. But at the same time, it's silly. It's also brings some real-world elements into a game that's so fantastical that makes it more, like, immerses you a little bit better in the game. Done!
Wow.
Nice. Right under the buzzer. V?
I know, I see you reaching
your forward. Rebuttal, V.
Okay, let me know when to start. basically, Final Fantasy, like most video games, is a piece of escapist art, and bringing in really obtuse, silly references like this to real-world products pulls you out of something which should have its value completely separate from the real world.
Wow.
I'm just going to hit it because I like to hit the button. Okay. No, good job. That was like 10 seconds.
You made maybe 1 point.
That's
such
a bold statement, though.
Not like a strong... Okay, so do you guys want to follow up with what you're saying?
I think in addition to the fact that it brings in real-world elements, it's also fun. It's also, like, interesting to see. I mean, plus, if this is another way for them to make money, I don't fault the company for doing this.
Although it didn't really factor into
the price of the game or anything
like that.
No, it doesn't translate to like, consumers. It doesn't, like, pass on.
If it was, like, a cheaper game because of some of these ads, that'd be kind of nice. Yeah.
But, I mean, I'm sure they're making some money off of this, right? I'm not saying that they have passed on the cost benefits to their gamers. They're basically making more money. And who's to judge someone for wanting to, you know, bolster their bottom line?
Gotcha.
I think my main issue is just how blatant all of this stuff is. Like, if it was just... So the main storyline of Final Fantasy 15 sees, like, four guys driving across a country trying to save this, that, or the other. And if they just, like, mentioned it in passing once or twice, I'd be completely fine. But the fact that there is a segment where you sort of, like, try to find ingredients to put in your cup noodle,
okay,
like,
yeah,
as a piece of art, like, the intersection of art and commercialism in that way just feels really wrong and not at all what I want out of a video game. I want to live this life. I want to follow these guys. Mm-hmm. I don't need to
these
see
bros.
Exactly. These I want to live the bro life with these guys in a car, yeah, in like a desert.
To be fair, I mean, there are varying degrees of subtlety in the way, uh-huh, they implemented this, right? It starts out very subtle with the Coleman cooler, right? And then it goes on to the cup of noodles game where you actually had to find the ingredients.
It escalates, yeah.
Which,
yeah,
to me is actually kind of the appeal. It makes me want to play the game now because I'm
wait,
like,
wait, no, that's not true.
It's true. Gosh, I play games like Hong Kong Cafe just because I want to make ramen. Like, that's, mm-hmm, that's people like me. There are people, this is a subjective, it's a personal uh-huh point of view thing. There are people who will be attracted to that. You're saying this because you don't enjoy the idea of...
Well, so your contention is that there is someone out there who will look at Final Fantasy 15, a game with a sprawling overworld and some kind of story, which doesn't really exist, but whatever. And we'll look at the fact that you can make cup noodle like halfway through the game and be like, yeah, I'm totally in.
Yeah, and then up and make a real cup of noodles for themselves.
To be clear, advertising in games isn't new. I remember seeing billboards and stuff in PC games, even in the 90s, right? Mm-hmm. That stuff has been...
And if you're a mobile gamer, like, yeah, you deal with...
It's
all the time.
It's unavoidable, for sure.
But to integrate it into the game, that's so much more interesting than just slapping an ad in your face.
I'm not saying it's not interesting. It's just bad. It's just a bad...
It's just bad on a moral level. I mean, Mallory, who do you think won this debate?
I mean, I personally have a lot of feelings about this.
That's fine.
But I really think that Velasco's statements were on point. I love you, Shalyn, but I really think his statements were on point.
I don't love you.
Wow.
Wow. Okay.
Team Brown just fell apart.
A divorce
in this
is happening in Team Brown?
No. So quickly.
Fine. Okay, cool. Great. My OG is still Momo, so she knows.
Wow.
By the way, who has never been on a podcast? And we need
to
finish.
She has.
One time.
And then she won, and then she never went back again.
Oh, boy.
The winning strategy.
Woo. Next one. Next story. There's a company that is using the Tinder UI for adoption. Swiping right or left on a child whose life you want to save. This is by the company Adoptly. Nathan Ingram just did a really good post about this, a good opinion piece. And as we can tell from the comments, too, people don't like what we say about this. But what do you guys think? Is it a good idea to implement the Tinder swipe UI in an adoption program type thing?
To be clear, my point of view is that it's not. It is a dehumanizing UI for such a prickly or a sensitive topic. Mm-hmm. There are instances where a swiping UI works, like, for example, real estate or buying shoes or whatever. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to children, humans, you can't just swipe left or right and say, oh, there's like millions around. There's a more personal connection to be made here.
Right under the buzzer.
I saw you reaching for it.
Yeah.
So I should throw it for the record. I do not believe most of what I'm about to say.
Okay.
But I think the thing to keep in mind about this situation is that, yes, it's a bad idea, but this is not going anywhere. Like, these are just guys with a bad idea. They don't have the money to pay the people developing the service. They don't have a long-term plan. It's just a thing they dreamed up and raised money for on Kickstarter. It's just Kickstarter crap.
Whoa.
So wow, that's your right?
apologies
argument.
To Kickstarter.
Well, I mean...
No
to
apologies
be fair,
to Kickstarter.
To be fair,
my point ultimately is that I can't argue with the fact that this is dehumanizing, but as a force that we would see in a larger scale, like this particular instance will not work.
You're saying it's not about to become a widespread means of adoption. Like, people are not going to adopt it.
Right. I think looking at the mechanism at play mm-hmm. here, it does not work. It will not work. These guys will realize that. But in the meantime, they don't have the resources to make this happen anyway.
I'm
it's a non-issue.
Okay, but to be extra clear, the question was, is it dehumanizing for an adoption app? So you agree with Charlene?
There is no taking another side on that.
Uh-huh. I really wanted you to go for it. And like,
all right, do you want me to like, do you really?
Go
if you
for
go
it.
For
you
it.
Had this is your
it's,
last chance.
It's great. You know, like speed. I've got to live with this kid for the next 18 years. Yeah, just give me, I'll take that one, please. I love speed
I mean,
and friction
in the same
life.
Way, and I don't want to make your argument for you, but I mean, the Tinder UI is also looking for something something similarly personal. You're looking for someone that might or might not spend the rest of your life with you, right?
I don't think people are looking for that.
No.
On the
Well, no, but a lot of other like dating and relationship apps take on the same form, where it's just easier to kind of sort through a bunch of people with that format.
But it's a sort, it's a sorting.
Right, but it's one
technique.
Thing if you're trying to, if you're weighing potential options as like a partner for your life. It's another when the person on the other end of those swipes is a person you're responsible for decades, right? Like you're not entering into a relationship of equals in that sense. It's you.
So the agency is on you and not on them either, right? It's not like a match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, but my point is still the same. It's dehumanizing. You're the one that has to.
I can't. I've argued myself into the only possible decision, which
is
that
Sherlyn is right. You've painted yourself into a little bit of a corner here.
Mallory,
I mean, Sherlyn for the win.
There's no two ways.
You're very reluctantly giving me that point, but I will take it very gladly.
I didn't reluctantly give you that point.
It's a well-earned point. I even tried arguing his point for him.
Yeah, you did.
I mean, but again, like he said, I don't think it's going to take off on a larger scale. Hopefully not. Although I don't remember what their Kickstarter reaction was. Like, I don't know if they've done well on Kickstarter.
If you want to see a lot of justification for using this, go look at our comments on that story.
Huh.
Because I think our readers just hate it when we criticize anything. It'll all make you a liberal snowflake, guys. Next story.
Liberal snowflake. Yeah.
That's
liberal,
what we are.
I love being a snowflake.
Yes. Next story?
Yeah, go ahead.
HTC's U Ultra. And
This is us right here.
Yeah. Oh, the big boss.
This is where we know what we're talking about. Whereas before... Well,
I like how you guys get very excited because nobody else in the world is excited for these phones. But will the HTC U Ultra and whatever the hell the big one is called... What is the big
the
one?
The U and the U Ultra.
U and the U Ultra.
U Play and the U Ultra.
U Play.
Good description. All right. Whatever the hell the other one is called.
Yeah.
So V is...
Will they save HTC?
We haven't seen a device that HTC has made that has the potential to save them as much as this thing does. The last few years, we've seen devices that operate on the same theme. These bring new elements to the table. They're not super novel, but they're signs of life in a company that sorely needs them.
All right. 15 seconds.
Wow. Okay.
Sherlyn?
I think signs of life aren't enough to revive a dying person or a company. And I think that the things they've tried to innovate on here are borrowed from so many other companies that there's not enough innovation going on from themselves. Stop cutting into my time!
I didn't. I caught myself.
No, that was about 12 seconds. Good points.
Keeping it tight.
Good points. Yeah, you guys are moving fast.
I will mention this, though, since we're going to, like, rant about phones for a little bit anyway.
Let's do that. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Oh my gosh. Nerds.
Like, yes. We've seen these sort of features in action before. Huawei has a very similar sort of AI-influenced sort of power and performance management system. And obviously the LG V10 and V20 have secondary screens, which the U Ultra does. I think there is an argument to be made that neither of them has really, like, nailed this so far. Huawei is harder to shake out because we haven't had it for that long.
Yeah.
And the potential payoff down the road could be really significant. I don't think I've seen a second screen device that has really made full functional non-gimmicky use. Whereas with the U Ultra, the gist of it is you've got this sort of AI assistant combing through your notifications, combing through your applications and seeing this is what you need at this time. This will get better with time. And it lives up here. It doesn't get in the way of all of the stuff that you do on the regular. It has its own zone that you can, you know, take to heart.
Is there any reason we should trust that, though? Like, HTC hasn't shown... They've taken a while to get good with their software. What was it?
Blinkfeed and
all that stuff. And that was, Blinkfeed got better over time, and then they kind of killed some of the more interesting features.
Was there
the
name
Sense
of
UI? Yeah. I don't, can we trust that HTC can actually build a useful, you know, AI type thing for this?
I mean, building an AI by any definition is going to be a really difficult and sort of long-term process. But we have seen HTC get better with software, to your point. Like, they've realized, hey, some of our stuff, like, it's just not necessary. So they've pulled it out. They've let Google stuff stand on its own. I think if nothing else, their understanding of the ecosystem and what people kind of want gives them maybe not an edge, but it gives them insight as to how something like this should work.
So I have two points against your argument here, and that Mallory, if you listen to this and understand what the argument here is, you will see it's very clear. First of all, HTC has done this for the past few years. They've iterated on something that they've known works for them, and they've tried to make it better, resulting in the 10, which was by far the best flagship they've ever made. So doing the whole improving on something that's tried and tested is kind of their thing, and it still hasn't brought them back to life, like, in that kind of a way. Mm-hmm. So kind of doing the same thing here, I don't see it panning out for them in a good way in the future. The second thing is what DaVinci pointed out is that AIs and digital assistants kind of isn't HTC's thing. If they had just used Google Assistant or even Alexa and implemented that with the second screen, I can see that going
if
somewhere.
If that was like a pure Google Assistant window up there,
I can
would
totally
be
see that going somewhere. Yeah. But that's not what they decided. Yeah. And so this is not enough to save HTC.
And you pointed this out before. They're basically just lifting features from LG. Like, it looks just like the V10 and the V20, the way the second screen is implemented.
I don't think the V20 had a second screen.
Is it?
It did. Yeah, it does.
Yeah.
That's the V series, Sherlyn.
Oh, that's right, yes. It's just so
that's
so
the whole point.
Unobtrusive this time around.
I also I didn't really care for either of those phones, too. So it seems like it's weird for that to be the feature HTC is jumping on here rather than, I don't know, doubling down on a new design or trying to... Like, think back to the original one, right? The M7. That thing kind of reshaped how we viewed phones moving forward. Like, the iPhone 6
Everyone
looks like that phone.
Yeah.
Everybody cloned it. That idea of having a unibody aluminum, you know, really nice feeling phone. And it's kind of surprising that they basically couldn't make it work, or they never got a good camera. And I think that always held them back.
That they were the first to do dual pixel.
Right.
I mean, what did they call it?
They did ultra pixel, but it didn't. That was a garbage.
But then they didn't do it well. You know
that,
what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And that was a garbage like excuse for having a 4-megapixel camera.
Right.
In your phone.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of mistakes. Some good design implementations, but yeah.
Anyway, I'm sure V has thoughts.
Yeah. I mean, so I think to your point about HTC sort of finding its rhythm with kind of variations on a theme, like a year after year, pretty consistent refinement. That's fair. I think, to your point, again, the HTC 10 is probably the best smartphone HTC has ever made. But I think after making that and not seeing it move the needle the way they needed it to, the time for a change was then. Like, they couldn't just keep making the same thing better. And with regard to the AI, frankly, we don't really know what's going on there. Like, it's very possible. Yeah. I doubt that there's probably like a couple guys working on AI, but it's not like a huge, huge team. They're probably licensing this from someone who knows what they're doing.
I mean, probably, but I also hate it when companies throw around terms like AI for what's basically, you're just organizing, you know, you're doing Google priority mail, basically, for, you know, my notifications. Yeah. That's all you're doing.
But man,
it's not
like,
AI.
Yeah, sure, but, like, good luck getting away from that in 2017, right?
No, to be true.
Like,
people are playing so hard and fast with that AI
so
lately,
awful.
Right?
Mallory, anyway. You be the judge.
This was a really tough one, because I really like both of your arguments.
Well, the question is, do you think this phone will save HTC? That's
basically off of the arguments that I heard. I'm going to go with Sherlyn on this one.
Sherlyn!
I mean, I didn't bring up this point before, but also the smartphone space is extremely competitive, and HTC just is going to struggle if it keeps just doing this boring old routine.
Follow-up question, do you guys think HTC will be around in its current form next year? Because
I think they're going to... They have the 1A9/... whatever it is now.
Yeah, like their Desire series, I think, will continue. Yeah. Like they
but
might.
But those are cheap phones. Well,
they still should exist.
So
I know.
The trajectory I see for HTC is that Vive gets spun out into its own thing. Like,
it's already its own thing.
Right, but like completely independent.
You
of
mean
HTC.
So somebody buys.
Somebody
Vive,
buys it, or like they just sort of realize most of our resources could do more.
Because right now Vive is an independent company. It's still a part of HTC, but
right. So I think we might see the nature of that relationship change. I don't think HTC has the guts and the resources to continue being a flagship player, but I do think their mid-range stuff is both strong enough and well-received enough to keep them around in some phone fashion for the next couple years.
They have some of the best-looking like mid-range phones
like
in the market.
But
can you build a business around mid-range phones?
There have been companies that have... HTC just has to like dial back its ambitions.
Right.
The thing
and
is
frankly...
Those,
go ahead.
Those other companies, to be clear, they're doing the cheap-ass phones. You know, they do other things.
Yeah.
Right
now, HTC, they don't do tablets. They make phones for other people. They design, you know...
They build phones
for other people.
No, that's fair.
Like the Pixels, you know.
Which isn't to say that that's like a bad strategy, right? That still could keep them in business for
right
a while.
Now, the best HTC phone on the market is the Pixel and Pixel XL.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. Which is still kind of ugly.
Ugly, but they feel really good.
They feel all right. They're okay.
I love the way they feel.
Anyway.
Even the big one. Even the Pixel XL.
Which is rare for you.
We can talk about phones forever. Like, let's be real. The three of us, four of us, can talk about phones forever.
I smell a spin-off. Let's talk about something.
I smell a spin-off. Phone
something else. Let's move on to our group chat.
This is where I can't talk.
And where I can talk.
I think as we'll learn, there's never a point where she can't talk.
Wow.
Yes.
You guys, this is live. Harsh. Y'all see Devendra being mean to
Let's
me.
Talk about the Nintendo Switch launch.
Okay.
Switch launch. And I had the chance to attend the New York event last week and actually got my hands on the hardware. And it feels pretty good. I had a lot of fun playing the games and just fondling all the new
Even
Nintendo
the milking
hardware.
One, right?
Even especially I had a lot of fun milking.
The milking one.
The
had
milking
a lot of fun
one.
Juggling the balls in my hands.
Ooh,
with
wow.
The,
that's
yeah,
kind of fun.
That's kind of fun, right after the milking thing. I don't, Japanese sensibilities, guys. Like, they built all these mini games and the demo people.
Racist.
Go look at our game coverage. Specifically, there's a post where we kind of do mini reviews of the games we've tested. And I did the video for that
it's
piece.
It's like you're explaining our coverage yes. to Sherlyn.
Yes.
I mean, I already
also,
read
I'm
it.
Sure,
so.
I'm sure Sherlyn didn't, but also we're explaining it to our listeners, yeah. Mallory.
I know.
People are listening to
this
show.
I get this.
But yeah, take a look at that video because that's just me running around like a wild man. And they have these, I think it's those mini games in 1-2 Switch, which is a collection of games. And it's just kind of batshit. It's just kind of crazy. Like, I don't even know if most of these ideas will work, but it's kind of an interesting look at you know, how to use this hardware. And Nintendo's kind of good at those things too.
Can I interject mm-hmm. for a sure. second here on something that I just realized way too late? Devendra uh-huh. Hardware?
Oh my God.
I have
You've been
no
working
words.
With him for how long?
I know, I just realized this. Hardware. Hey. Anyway,
wow.
So segue.
Wow.
Thoughts on the
Bye,
hardware.
Sherlyn.
Thoughts on the hardware.
Nice
so.
Knowing you.
I'll get back to the mini games. But yeah, the hardware feels very good. Mm-hmm. I like the, it feels like the Wii U gamepad, except thinner, and actually strangely heavier, too. The Wii U gamepad feels kind of like a Fisher-Price toy, because it's mostly hollow and big and plasticky. This one feels more solid, but kind of heftier, too. But it feels good in your hands, because the screen, you know, it's the screen's like between 6 and 7 inches. It's a pretty big screen. It's kind of wide, so just juggling that in your hands as a portable system feels a little odd. It's a 6.2-inch, 720p capacitive touchscreen. Mm. And it feels weird holding that just because it's like holding a small tablet, basically, with controller ends. But yeah, the controller bits feel really good, the Joy-Con stuff in portable mode. You know, I was able to play Splatoon 2, Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. And in desktop mode, those controllers worked fine for Zelda as well.
What kind of a processor is it?
It's the NVIDIA Tegra X1 processor.
So pretty powerful.
It's okay. I mean,
it's been around the block.
It's been around. We saw it in the NVIDIA Shield TV and some of their devices in 2015.
Yeah, I know. It's old, but it's good enough
it's
for
old.
Portable.
And I think we're going to see in portable mode, like, it was fine. It's 720p.
Right. I was going to say desktop.
On the desktop side, like, when you plug it into your TV, I think watching Zelda running off of that hardware, it seemed... It wasn't exactly choppy, but it wasn't like super high res. It didn't feel like 1080p either.
They're not getting
so
Zelda in 1080p. Didn't that come out yesterday?
Yeah, the story, it's running at like, what, 900p or something?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like
that's
people will see
is.
These differences, right. but it's just to my, like, you know, my video geek eye and my gamer eye, like, there are certain things I could see. Nintendo's never been about hardware power, but the Wii and Wii U were, you know, far less powerful than the other systems on the market.
But I mean, I think we should talk about how excited the rest of you are for this, because I feel like everyone on the staff pre-ordered
excited.
Theirs
like,
already.
I'm kind of meh about it.
Oh, yeah?
I think I put a tweet out that said those exact words. I was like, I'm kind of meh, but while I get it, yes. Yeah. I mean, I was pretty... Like,
yeah.
Why are
Go
you
ahead.
Mad about it?
Because I have an article up right now. we wrote about this rumor that Nintendo filed for a VR patent for the Switch. And that made me, like, super excited because I'm kind of, like, VR, like, geek at this point.
That won't really happen with that hardware, though.
Nope.
Yeah, I know. So I was, like, super excited. I was like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be great. Maybe a replacement to, like, Gear VR. Like,
maybe it'll be upcoming, right? Because patents filed tend to kind
And I'm also, trying to figure out if I'm going to get a PS4 Slim right now to get a PSVR. And so, in my mind...
Get the pro.
Get the
Dark Kermit.
Get the pro, bro. Oh,
this is my role at Engadget to, like, subtly help people make really bad buying
decisions.
Also,
don't buy the PSVR yet.
He has made me.
I mean,
buy this
I tried it at your apartment. And it was okay.
Yeah.
That was not me.
That was on
That
me.
Was kind of me. With regard to Switch,
yes.
So I was kind of. Yeah. I didn't even get to finish.
God.
So
finish.
I was kind of upset that there was no inkling of any VR capabilities. But on the other hand, the price is nice.
Yeah, and $300.
I loved the Wii for what it was, and as like a casual gamer.
But you guys didn't have the Wii U.
Because the Wii U like is hot garbage. My friend has a Wii U.
Yeah, I like the Wii U just fine. It's just I can understand why.
It's hot garbage, Devendra.
It's a good system. It's just Nintendo didn't quite know how to sell its capabilities, right? Like Mario.
I would say they weren't speaking to casual gamers. The casual gamer like me, they spoke to me and got me into the Wii to a point where I wasn't even going to the gym anymore because I was doing Wii.
Well, that's something. I mean, so the Wii U seemed like a misstep. Mostly because Nintendo saw tablets and was like, hey, let's put a tablet on our console. Except they didn't realize that, people like tablets because you could take it places. You could take it on the bus. You could take it somewhere and like actually still play a game on a decently sized screen. And that's what they're doubling down on here.
And when there's something called the 3DS, I think.
Yeah. That's a separate story. But one of the cool things you could do with the Wii U was like just play a game on that little gamepad. And I knew people who would just like move the Wii U base console like around their house so they could just like, you know, plug it in their bedroom and just like have portable gaming there. So now, you know, you don't have to do that sort of thing. I think that's kind of cool.
So V and I were talking a little bit about the Switch right before we started. And I think one of my questions was that, you know, launch game titles are kind of limited, it seems like. I don't know what you think. Because you're more of a gamer.
Well, sure. But, like, we've determined this, what, three? Maybe four. So there's the big stuff. There's Zelda Breath of the Wild. Yeah. There's 1-2 Switch, that collection of minigames. Mm-hmm. There's Just Dance, which launched last year. Like, it's a port of a game that is already available on the Wii U, I'm fairly sure. And then, like, a Skylanders thing? So like great, man, great if you're like 12 years old. But anyone else who has like the money, which again, it's like a thing people
Hey, don't
stole.
Knock Skylanders. Did you ever play Disney Infinity?
It's hot trash.
Infinity was amazing.
I agree that's all trash.
It's all bad. It's all bad. Yeah. It's just a cash grab and you fell for it. But
my husband and I had a large collection of Skylanders sets.
They won. They won. But ultimately my point is There was no mention of a Pokemon, which to me is like a system mover.
Yeah.
The only other game that I've seen in the offing that has any real for me is Fire Emblem, and that's not coming out until 2018. So in fairness,
nobody buys a system for Fire Emblem, unfortunately. But
a statement on their quality. But I think my point is there really isn't. Like, for the people who would buy something like this, it does, I think, really nicely bridge the gap between a home machine and a portable machine. Is it particularly amazing at both? Maybe not. That remains to be seen. But there's more potential there than we've seen from Nintendo in a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think their software, their lineup is in any position to move systems as of March 3rd or whenever it launches.
I think like, what we're noticing, too, is, like, Nintendo moved really quickly, right? When did they announce this thing? In, like October?
Yeah, October last
year. Like, really quickly. And, like, we got the announcement details. We have a launch coming in March. It seems like they're just trying to accelerate, maybe to beat out the Xbox Scorpio or whatever that is, like, when that launches at the end of the year. They're not really competing with Sony and Microsoft here, but it seems like they just need to get out to the market and basically erase the Wii U as quickly as possible. Like that's.
I mean, I don't blame them because that's like a black mark on like their history.
So if the launch lineup isn't great, it's okay. Yeah, agreed. Although I think a lot of people will be getting it. Like the people pre-ordering it are getting it for Zelda,
sure.
And they're going to play Zelda, and they're going to play Zelda wherever they want, which is that's the big appeal. But it seems like they have a decent lineup for the rest of the year, at least. Hopefully, we'll hear more at E3.
Right.
I just hope that a Pokemon game will come. I feel like that would be a huge win.
I think that's kind of unavoidable, right? Yeah. Like, just because it's portable. Like, you can't.
But, like, I was very excited. Like, there was some rumor about it, and we wrote about it, that there might be a Pokemon game coming
Pokemon
at launch.
Yeah, Pokemon Stars
and I was
or
so excited, because I just got Pokemon Sun and Moon almost done, playing it.
But we just got a massive new Pokemon game that took a while. Yeah, that took a while to come out. I could see, like, I'm sure Pokemon would sell the system. Maybe we'll see something by the end of the year, something Pokemon-wise.
Well, they were talking about Sun and Moon-specific, like, version for Switch.
That could be interesting.
Although, it would also be nice to kind of get a main series Pokemon game on a home console, which has never happened, ever,
and I would love that.
I will throw this out there, though. Just looking back at the Wii U, which, as we all know now, has been a bit of a garbage fire, it launched with 23 games. So, like, they were definitely feeling it, and it wound up in the dumpster. So
maybe they're scared? Yeah.
So to release a product with what seems to be is infinitely more potential with a handful of games, one of which is really going to be worth playing.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like you're shooting yourself in the foot.
I think it sounds like they've shifted their focus mm-hmm. to something better.
In the launch lineup, like, you can only judge so much from a launch lineup, right?
Well, I think you can mm-hmm. you can make some pretty accurate judgments about developer enthusiasm.
Yeah, that,
I guess, except we don't know how long the developers had to, like, really sit down and build something for this. Like I was pointing out, like, all of this is happening super fast. So a lot of devs don't want to show anything if they don't have anything, you know, that's actually done or ready in time.
And
so
also,
we'll
judging
see.
By the mm-hmm. hype around the Switch, I think that mm-hmm. developers are going to be encouraged to keep, you know, creating yeah. software games for them.
So, and let me tell you, like, just based on what I saw, I played ARMS, which is the new, like, unboxing game using the Joy-Cons and motion controller mode. And that felt pretty good. Like, just being able to move around. When you punch, you can kind of angle your fist to angle the punch on the
very
screen.
Cool.
It's doing fun and new things. 1-2 Switch has those mini games. I don't know how much lasting value they'll have.
Yeah.
But what's interesting about those is that you're not looking at the TV. Like, you start the game and you're listening to audio cues and you're, like, staring at your opponent, basically. You're staring at the person you're playing against. So it's basically turning the Switch into, like, almost like a board game type thing or like a party game thing, which is kind of fun too. I like that idea just because there's so much going on in the controllers that you don't even have to, like,
VR potential.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not VR.
Well, not that screen and not the one, but the controller implementation.
Yeah.
The controller,
but
maybe.
But that's kind of like the touch.
It's basic motion control. It's not like 3D object tracking.
They wouldn't
or
have the resolution for that kind of thing.
I mean.
That 720p is ass.
For the controller.
Oh, just I'm talking about like motion tracking. Like,
I don't
think it can be that
granular,
need,
like,
right?
Yeah, you need actual 3D space motion tracking and not just like, you know,
accelerometer. Right.
Speaking of the controllers, what is, I forget what they call it, but like HD Touch or HD Rumble?
Yeah.
That's sort
it's
of
just Rumble. It's a really good Rumble. It feels almost like the 3D Touch from the iPhone. So there's one mini game in 1-2 Touch where you're kind of holding a box or you're pretending it's a box. It's filled with like a mystery amount of like metallic balls. And you're just, you have to like move it left and right to like, to like basically, it's like a kid's game. To like feel like, oh, how many are being held in here? Yeah, clearly, both
like,
of you are.
You like Play-Doh, right?
Man.
Yeah, I like Play-Doh and metallic balls.
And what was what was really interesting, too, is like if you put it in tabletop mode, I was playing, I was using one of the Joy-Cons, like a small NES gamepad. And it's not very comfortable, but I was playing with somebody else near me, and we were playing Snipperclips, which is this puzzle game where you basically have to coordinate with the person you're working with to fit yourselves into puzzle pieces or to solve stages. And that's a really new, that's like a type of gameplay I haven't really experienced, maybe not since like old school console days, like not since the N64 or even the SNES. Like,
wow.
I think the Switch is going to bring new sorts of gaming back for people. And you'll have your PlayStation 4, or your Xbox One back at home for your big, you know, big budget games.
Yeah.
This is something else. So I'm more intrigued. What is weird coming out of that event, I was so like hyped and enjoyed everything I saw and just seeing on the internet, like everybody just hating it. And that was a weird response too. Like everyone's like, yeah, I just don't get it. And
really?
I guess it's one of those things where you have to, like, maybe get it in your hands and start, like, really playing it. There are definitely issues. Battery life
like
is going to be an
a
issue.
I had a Twitter poll, actually, about that topic. I asked people what you think the Nintendo Switch is, living room console or, like, portable. And it was very mixed. I think 45% of the people thought that it was portable.
Uh-huh.
And then 30% thought that it was, like, living room.
Well, that's about right.
And then I threw in a Yoshi robot assistant for fun. And most people thought it was that.
One last question, I guess, before we move off the Switch. What do you guys think this means for the 3DS, which is Nintendo's actual portable system right now?
I just bought a 2DS, so I really hope that it's not the end for Nintendo's portable console.
It's still a good, like, there. You have a huge library of games to tap into. There's a lot of stuff you could play on that.
And it's cheaper, right?
It's super cheap.
So
it was $80 for my 2DS, which is, you can't beat that.
Yeah. And the 3DS is, what, $150 and below at this point, depending on, like, what model do you get?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But what do you guys think? Like, now you have a home console that's effectively could be a portable console, although you can't fit in your pocket. You need to have, like, a bag or something.
I've got some
it.
Thoughts, because the Switch effectively gets rid of Street Pass and the Miiverse, and those are kind of two of the recent hallmarks of the 3DS and 2DS world, like the ability to just walk by somebody and trade with them. Like, I love that aspect.
Have you used it though?
Yes, I use
and it.
It
works?
Yes, I use it quite frequently, and I trade a lot in my neighborhood.
I've never had good luck with
it. Yeah, me neither. Yeah. Actually, I don't think I've ever actually had like a good interaction via Street Pass with another human being.
I got some good Pokemons. You know,
we slept the battle, by the way.
Yeah, we did.
Throwing this out there, throwing the glove down on the podcast.
Okay, I normally bring my 2DS everywhere, but it's not with me today, which is weird. So I'll bring it in next week, and we'll
and
do it.
And the Switch is going to have a online. Like an online platform of some kind.
Right, so
that's different because Nintendo's tried several times and failed at doing online anything, right?
So it's more of a centralized service this time akin to like a PlayStation Network or an Xbox Live where you pay a monthly fee. It does matchmaking. It gives you access to one free game, which you don't get to keep, which is a little odd, but sure, whatever, fine. It does seem a little hamstrung right out of the gate. I mean, this isn't a thing that we really have been able to experience yet and probably won't for at least another month or so. But things like voice chat, which has always kind of historically been absent from Nintendo consoles, I think with good reason, because kids are kids, and they're going to be playing with adults,
kids
and also kids are just jerks to other people in general. So that's yes.
That's me. I'm a kid.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
but this time, so the intent is that you run voice chat off of a separate smartphone app, which just to me adds another potential point of failure to the mix. And frankly, at that point, if you're using something else to coordinate with people anyway, like get a Skype call going, get a hangout
or
going.
Or a phone call.
Or a
phone
call. Phone
calls?
No,
guys,
no.
You're so
what
old.
Phones?
You
can
totally do it.
All right. So that software thing isn't really going to...
I mean, it's people will buy into it out of necessity. And I think Nintendo has a pretty good understanding of how to sweeten the pot over time, but I don't think that the infrastructure, like, I don't think they've completely wrapped their head around the best way to make this work, and more importantly, how to make it work on a device that is as portable as it is stationary.
Although, I guess it's interesting, if you push it to a mobile device, then you really keep it out of the hands of, like, really, really young kids, or kids who don't have those things, and that's exactly what Nintendo wants. They want to keep those people, those young kids, safe, and that's what's held back a lot of their online services for so long. So maybe it's a way of separating that audience a bit, the more the teens and the adults, so-called adults who have these devices can run some sort of multiplayer thing.
Is that a dig at me, Dimitra?
What?
No.
Wow, are you taking everything real personal today?
Wow.
Jeez, I mean, Mallory.
It's my mood.
Just because you're wearing a Pikachu hat right now, Mallory, does not mean...
Lies to the people watching this on Facebook Live and YouTube.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think we're good on the Nintendo Switch. I think we have... exhausted.
Before,
Sherlyn's like, I don't want to talk about games anymore.
No, V had something to say.
Can we run a Twitter poll to decide whether or not I cancel my Switch pre-order? Because like, I woke up the day after the live stream.
Oh, you don't do that and you resell
it. Just resell it on eBay.
Yeah,
exactly.
For money. Mm.
Duh.
For money.
V, stop throwing your money away.
You,
make money.
You're asking
so
the
you
impossible
actually,
here.
You pre-ordered it already?
Well, so I woke up the morning after the Nintendo Direct live stream and like went to Target's website and was like, oh, it's available. I found the loophole. No one else knows about this yet. So I obviously pre-ordered it, and I was obviously very wrong. But I have one. It's going to come a couple days after launch.
Yeah, I would not cancel your pre-order just because it's more valuable than you think, even if you don't want it. Also, it's funny. A lot of people I heard was like, yeah, I pre-ordered, and then I cancel. I'm like, I guess I just don't know that thought process right now.
Like, why would you can't? Like, if you already have it coming, just keep it and resell it.
Or... I mean, I guess there's it's more troublesome to resell it than to just
it
cancel
is.
And get your money
it
back
is.
Immediately.
Although,
I guess.
Even like, I'm sure Craigslist or something, like, so you don't even have to ship at that point. Like, you could just say, I have a Switch, and people
come
will throw money at you.
Literally.
Like, that's all you have to do.
Especially when that Pokemon sweetness happens.
Yeah, and when that happens,
I will
buy one. I will definitely buy one in 2018.
One
but
more...
if you pre ordered it, then. You can just have it and then play Pokemon on it.
Or, yeah.
Hi, y'all.
It's going to
be one more group story. One more group story before we finish this podcast. So it was announced yesterday that President Obama surprisingly, earlier this week, but President Obama commuted Chelsea Manning's sentence. And Chelsea Manning is the former Army intelligence analyst who leaked a lot of documents to WikiLeaks and started... it was kind of a thing. Like, that's what helps make WikiLeaks a very important source for a lot of newspapers. Yeah. The New York Times was using their information. I mean, I think most of you will remember that video, too, showing a U.S. helicopter attack in Baghdad that ended up killing journalists. So Chelsea Manning was... convicted of violating the Espionage Act in 2013, sentenced to 35 years. And it turns out, so she is actually going to be free in a couple months, May 17th. So she served about seven years of this thing. What do you guys think about this? Because it was a surprising development. Do you think it was fair?
4 years, right? Not seven. 2013 to 2017.
Yes, you're right. But no, she. I mean, she was. That it took a while.
Yeah,
for her
to get
convicted.
Sure.
So yeah.
I mean, understanding the reasoning or understanding why people have been petitioning to get her to at least be moved to a different facility or, mm-hmm. Is what makes me feel like this was justified somewhat, because as a transgender woman, she's now in an all male prison.
Yeah,
that is just awful.
And that's she's already tried to commit suicide at least twice.
Yeah.
So just in light of that alone, I think yes, this was justified. Even if it wasn't, you know, I didn't need it to be him to commute it or completely pardon her. Mm-hmm. Just move her. That's all I kind of wanted. But even
and
then,
yeah, to be clear, this isn't a complete pardon. Yeah, it's mercy.
It's more like shortening the sentence she had from 35 to 4 years. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I also again if the idea was to move her somewhere else, I don't think there was anywhere she would have fit in.
Yeah, so it would have been difficult. And it's also the argument from a lot of legal authorities, too, or theorists, mm-hmm. is that, you know, it was an excessive punishment. I think for people who do similar things like this, they usually see between like 7 and 10 years.
Yeah.
But maybe it's the extent and how much information.
Yeah.
You know, she put out there.
35 years
really
is mm-hmm. a long sentence to for not mm-hmm. having killed anyone. Well, not directly. I mean, and I'm not sure kind of how that video impacted other people.
Yeah.
But it seems like the penalty was heavier because of that video.
Yeah. I think it was our government's first. This was the first time like a lot of government secrets were kind of spilled out there, mm-hmm. and that was like as social media was blowing up. It was as you know,
she
people
like
were finally online.
Snowden by 3 years.
Oh no, definitely. Yeah, yeah. Thoughts?
I mean, I think not to be a super like pro rah rah government guy, but like I think given the circumstances and sort of the fury that sort of came about because of all this, I think the administration did what they thought was prudent at the time. But as time has progressed and we've seen A, what Chelsea has been going through, and sort of B, the fallout from what has been released sort of take shape, I don't think we're functionally that much worse off. Obviously, I mean, this mm-hmm. is a very outsider perspective. Like, I'm not, we can't speak for any sort of internal government stuff. But, I mean, like, my life functionally hasn't changed. I would argue most people would stay the same. The fallout, like, doesn't seem commensurate with the crime at this point. So, mm-hmm. to me, it's a logical move.
I mean, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I think I commend Obama on his very like diplomatic approach. Like you said, it's not a complete pardon. He's just commuting. So that way there can't be some crazy like right wingers being like, oh no, but like, no, I didn't pardon her. I commuted the sentence.
Yeah. Although you'll still have that.
You'll still have that.
Yeah, the distinction won't exist for some people.
It's also strange to think about Manning's story now, because this was when WikiLeaks was an up and coming organization. It was kind of interesting, and you know, Julian Assange mm-hmm. was not the character he is now.
Mm-hmm.
And now WikiLeaks has turned into kind of something else.
Yeah.
Then
one day somewhere in the Engadget chat room we were like, "So wait, is WikiLeaks evil now?" And I was like, "Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Well then."
Yeah. I mean, take this with a grain of salt too, but I've seen people theorizing that at some point like WikiLeaks ended up being a pawn for Russia as well, or at least in some way like Putin and the Russian government had something on Assange that,
like you could say that WikiLeaks, mm-hmm. in effect, was a catalyst on this current election and what's going to happen.
Definitely.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. With the DNC thing.
So,
right?
It's just funny how much has changed, because when this information got out there, WikiLeaks was kind of being heralded as this new form of information and a new way for reporters to get information securely and things like that. It's fallen quite a bit since then.
I mean, speaking of Assange, mm-hmm. one of the questions we were looking at here was whether, I mean, he promised, right, if she was ever pardoned, that he would come back to the U.S. from, I guess, from London, mm-hmm. the Ecuadorian embassy that he's holed up in. This isn't exactly a pardon. So do you think this is something, though, that will spur him to come back?
Yeah.
No.
He said,
I guess we'll see. But I think he also, wasn't it, if if they had moved Manning, he also would have come as well.
I thought it was just a pardon, but I mean, I might have missed out on anything else he might have said. But, I mean, given the sentiment now around, like, intelligence-related, espionage-related kind of offenses, do you think if he did come back and if he did go through, you know, due order and everything, or due process, that he would face a lighter sentence at all?
Yeah, I don't know if this would affect him, especially after the election and after some of the things WikiLeaks was tied to there, too.
Yeah, I feel like if this happened maybe even, like, a month or two earlier and he did come back, it would have been very harsh on him. But with the current administration, the new administration is coming in.
But the new administration sort of benefited from all of that
stuff. They won't. I'm saying that it would have been harsher on him if he came back before. But if he comes back, like, maybe slap on the wrist, I don't know.
Maybe that's his plan. Also wanted to point out, Obama also pardoned the Stuxnet leaker, James Cartwright, which is interesting as well. Because Stuxnet is a really interesting thing. I talked to Alex Gibney, the documentary director, about this last year, about his film Zero Days. So check that out. We have a video interview and a long interview there. But, you know, Stuxnet was this U.S.-backed malware built together with Israel that attacked Iran's nuclear program. And that kind of preceded a lot of cyber attacks. Like, after that, I felt like, or I think we've noticed, like, other countries felt okay implementing their own types of cyber attacks, probably because of Stuxnet, or Stuxnet kind of was the catalyst for a lot of a lot of countries. Yeah,
I mean, it's hard not to look at Stuxnet as a first bullet fired in a new generation of cyber war. And it's really interesting, too, to look at how Cartwright was being treated. So I think ultimately, sentencing was down to something like 2 years of prison, which, I mean, like, bad, sure, but, like, really not that big a deal compared to some of the other sentences we've seen commuted and sort of taken care of in the waning days of the Obama presidency. Like,
he was facing up to 5 years.
Up to
5. He sentenced, yeah.
Yeah, and his defense was looking for something like 600 hours of community service or something.
I mean, this is a potentially stupid question.
No.
But, so these are presidential pardons or commutations or whatever that
commutations.
Commutations.
Well, Stuxnet, it was a pardon in that case.
So that's a pardon that's a commutation. Mm-hmm. So is there any chance these get overturned?
Well, pardons don't get overturned because that's kind of like the president's last parting gift
to
certain individuals.
Okay, cool. I was just curious.
Although there are certainly other sorts of things, a government could do.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing stopping an incoming president from, like, cooking up another charge and going after a person who is pardoned for something completely quote-unquote separate.
Yeah, or even the Chelsea Manning's case, like, Trump could come in and be like, oh, I don't agree, and find something, like you're saying, something else to kind of, like, put her back.
So this is kind of tenuous. This is not
I mean,
fun.
Everything
I mean, a lot
is
of
tenuous.
None of it is fun, but
it's the best.
I mean, we're hanging in kind of, we're,
it's the best option for these folks. Another thing, the Obama administration has, they've contrasted Chelsea Manning's position to Edward Snowden. Chelsea Manning, you know, she presented herself to the court. She was judged. She went through that whole process. It wasn't a great process, but she went through it. Edward Snowden, he stayed out of the country. He escaped to Russia, and now he's under, you know, Russian protection, I guess, in a certain way. Do you think the Obama administration has a point not to pardon or not to go easy on Snowden at this point?
I 100% think they have a point. Not that I think they should not go easy on Snowden, but I think that Chelsea Manning, in, you know, facing trial and everything, is much more above board than fleeing your country and not going through the due process. Like, between the two of them, if Obama had to pick one to pardon, I would pick Chelsea Manning.
Well, it also happened before. And I think partially what led Snowden to do what he did was he saw how Chelsea Manning was treated, though. So, but it wasn't great.
I mean, as much as I would love Snowden to be pardoned, he has not apologized and, like, he hasn't come back to the U.S. And I was, like, talking about this last night, actually, with some friends. He's in a kind of precarious situation.
Oh, yeah.
Because Russia has extended his asylum up to 2020. And, like, my thinking is, why would Russia do that? Like, are they going to, like, say he's some type of spy? So if he takes the asylum and becomes a citizen, which he is eligible to be a Russian citizen in a year, which is kind of crazy, Like, what would happen to Snowden if he became a Russian citizen? Would he disappear into the Kremlin and we never hear from him again?
I mean, I think his value on the world stage, like, would prevent him from ever really disappearing. But, I mean, just by, let's say hypothetically he does become a Russian citizen, like, I don't see how he doesn't become a persona non grata of the United States. Like, Obama has shown a real hesitance to pardon whistleblowers. I don't think Chelsea Manning might be the first real high-profile case that happened. Even that's a commutation. For him to potentially, or anyone coming in, to look at someone like Edward Snowden, who has done what he's done, arguably for better or worse, I mean, we could argue about that all day, but for him to extend an olive branch to someone who has then become a full-fledged citizen of a nation which we have strong suspicions of pulling some really shady shit.
Yeah.
I hesitated, but shady shit. In our, I don't know how PG-13 we can get on. But anyway, like it couldn't happen. Like he I don't see him coming back for a very long time.
Yeah. No. Although I think the importance of the information he put out there is insanely it's dramatic. Like it reshaped policy, it reshaped the national conversation, it kind of made it clear how far the government was going when it came to things like privacy and surveillance. These are all important points. And I also wanted to point out, too, that it wasn't his choice to end up in Russia.
Right.
He got stuck there. Like, he was trying to, was it somewhere in South America, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is also not great either, but probably a little better as a place to hide out than Russia. Because, I mean, he also couldn't have predicted that all these Russian ties to election hacking and, influencing this last election. Yeah, it's not a great spot for him to be in at this point. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's like, as far as we know, I mean, there's not much else that we can go on.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, none of them are talking about coming back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess it's worth reading up on all the stuff right now. And I wonder how, just given Trump's rhetoric, like, how will he treat any of this stuff, too? Like, how will he treat Edward Snowden if Snowden was forced to leave Russia or something?
I wouldn't imagine well.
I don't know. There's,
Yeah. There's a lot we don't know. Okay, anything else you guys want to add about this or the Chelsea Manning story?
I mean, just that I hope the last 5 months for general. Chelsea Manning will be, you know, bearable at the very least.
Safe ones.
Yeah, and there she's protected in some way. If anything, solitary, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, guys. Where can people find all of you on the internet, Sherlyn?
On the Stuxnet.
that's not how it works.
I know. At Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter.
At MMSuperflyJR. There is a story to that handle one day.
Can you
day.
Repeat that handle?
At MMSuperflyJR. And God, yes, there is a senior.
Terrible, terrible handle.
I thought you were
who
like...
senior?
My older sister has the senior.
Oh, damn.
What?
Yeah.
So now I can just contact your older sister and be like, hey, well, so what's
well, that's, of course. That's not her. That's not her accurate email address. She kind of has a variation on that, but...
I'll find it. I'll Google it.
She was the senior. That's
I'll find
for
it on the
our social end. Media head, Mallory. I don't know about that.
I tried to get at Mallory, okay?
Yeah.
I tried
to get I'm sure.
Get at me, bro.
Velasco.
Hey, you can hit me up on at Chris Velasco at Twitter. I'm also at v@engadget.com if you want to chat via email because people still
do
that.
Are you still doing that? Inviting them to email you. Okay.
Why?
I've done some good stuff.
Wow, you were a brave soul.
I like to stay in touch with our people.
I do too. I talk to them all day long.
I'm at Devendra on Twitter. I also podcast about movies and TV at slashfilm.com. So check that out. If you have any questions, complaints, suggestions, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at all those handles, but also follow Engadget.
And also follow at Engadget Podcast.
Yes, Engadget Podcast. Email us at podcast@engadget.com. Thanks for joining us. Don't forget to rate us on iTunes. I'd love to see more reviews and more people who don't hate us.
Subscribe to us on SoundCloud. I manage our SoundCloud page, and it's one of my like personal projects.
Okay. And you're like a SoundCloud nerd too, right?
Yes. So. I do like music and audio production on the side. So we have a SoundCloud page at Engadget Podcast there as well.
Cool.
Follow us there.
Thanks. And check out Engadget next week if we're still here. I don't know if we're still going to be around. I don't know if America's still going to be around next week.
Oh, gosh. Oh, do you know something we don't know?
I know we're going to have a new president tomorrow.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.